everybody, and welcome back into the Sorry to Interrupt podcast. It's a Monday rundown in traditional form, Tommy Boy, just you and me. Will was not able to join for tonight, but that's totally cool. Did you get to see the eclipse? Was that a big deal up there? How you doing?
I mean to ask you about that. I'm doing well. Yeah, Will is in surgery right now. As we all know, Will's a doctor, so there's more important things in life. I did catch the eclipse. I got out of the place I was working at. I had my glasses ready to go, courtesy of my lovely mother. She gave me a pair, as well as my coworker. So we went out and took a peek at it. It kind of just looked like when the moon looks like a croissant, I guess you would say.
The crescent.
Crescent. I like to say croissant. I've been to France before, so
You never hesitate to point that out.
Yes, I have been to Paris. Not a big deal. But I heard that down in the Texas area, it was quite an event because you guys got like the, I don't know, the most effects, I guess you will. Was it like pitch black down there for an hour?
Yeah, so it was weird. Hill country, like Fredericksburg, Dripping Springs, like a lot of towns like that are just kind of outside of Austin, were flocked with people coming here to see it because, yeah, we were kind of in the path. It was like, I think Burlington, Vermont, Cleveland, Ohio, Dallas, parts of like the greater Austin area were supposed to have the best visibility. But, dude, the clouds, they killed it. It was a cloudy day here.
We had clouds, too.
It really ruined it.
Yeah, kind of broke it up for me. I was looking more at the glasses to see if they warned you on the glasses not to drive with them on. And I was like, maybe I got a little lawsuit here if I crash into a phone pole with these things on and they didn't warn me. But I kind of thought better of it. I probably wouldn't have gotten anything out of it either because my work gives me a car. So I just didn't put them on in the car.
I'm glad you thought better of it. Yeah, it was not the hype that everybody, including myself, was hoping for because, the last time we had one was in 2017, and that one I actually got a great picture of. It was really cool, and it kind of lived up to it. I know it's a different kind of eclipse and all that nonsense, but this one was really heavily talked about, and it wasn't what I was hoping it would be, and I just went back
inside. I'm sorry you're disappointed.
It was cool, though, that everybody like left because, where I work, it's a giant place. There's 10,000, 11,000 people that worked there. So everybody going outside and congregating was kind of a cool moment. And that collective disappointment was felt.
Yeah, no, listen, I get it. And honestly, on behalf of the Earth, actually not even the Earth, on behalf of our universe, I just want to apologize
to
you.
Solar system, baby.
On behalf of our solar system and our universe, I want to apologize to you personally that it wasn't what you expected.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, and I'm glad that you can be a good spokesman for this for the lovely universe and solar system that we reside.
Speaking of apologies, does anybody have to apologize to you? Maybe somebody on this pod that can't defend themselves against Stanton? I mean, I know it's just one big fat home run, but let's talk some Yankees. Let's jump right in. They took 2-3 from the Blue Jays. They're fucking 8-2. They're rolling. One of the biggest reasons why we wanted to have Dr. Will on here was to have him talk about the Yankees, but listen, we also forgot to mention at the top of the pod, Bill, that we are going to attempt to and probably follow through on because we're dialed, giving everybody a pod every single day this week, 7 days of the week during Masters Week. That's not 5 days. That's not six, not five, not six, not seven. It's seven.
Yes, seven.
Yes,
seven.
Yes.
Yeah, you can stop right there. We got a busy week, boys and girls, so stay locked in.
And you'll be hearing from Will plenty.
Yes, make sure you've got us on subscribe, make sure you got us on immediate download, rate and review, all that good stuff, because there's going to be a lot of it. But yeah, Tom, kicking off today, the Yankees, and by the way, they're rolling the Marlins right now, 6-0, both Volpe and Soto hit 3-run jacks, and those two guys are off to just prolific starts. But I went on a little bit of a Twitter rant yesterday from the account, because I'm so tired of hearing people basically talk as if Stanton's just like, he's this cancer of a player on the team. And look, we all know what the limitations are. And we all know because of his monstrous contract that money being tied up in him for being about a half of a baseball player over the last year, year and a half, has, kind of crippled the Yankees financially in the sense of you're not going out and signing Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery, and certain decisions aren't there. Now, you know, it's not his fault the Yankees decided to give $25 million to Josh Donaldson. But you look at Stanton, and he's really been, you know, we thought we were getting the MVP and all that, and he's had some huge moments. I kind of think of him as like the anti-A-Rod from the sense of, you know, he didn't come over and start having these monster regular seasons. He misses a lot of time. You know, when A-Rod was a Yankee, his first 4 or 5 years, he played every game. He had prolific, you know, 2 MVP years, but the playoffs were his kryptonite. Whereas Stanton has been an issue as to why the Yankees haven't gotten to the playoffs or have been early exit playoffs, because he misses huge chunks of time in the regular season and doesn't always live up to what you thought that you were going to get. But he's been super clutch. He's had some big time moments. He's had the knack for the dramatic, and he's done everything right in New York. If he was a prick, if he was like, I'll revert back to Josh Donaldson and stuff like that, I would totally get it. But like for the Yankee fan collectively to choose him as their villain, I just think it's a really shameful example of what how great this fan base can be.
Yeah, I think it's more of just a testament to how much this team is rolling that we're pretty much nitpicking, which is disappointing, and shame on the Yankees fans for that, because we always shit on the Mets fans for the woe is me at the beginning of the season, as you know. And then when they start to percolate and talk shit, then we talk shit to them. So let's just act like we fucking been there before. And I agree with you completely. Obviously, Stanton's injuries, he hasn't had a great career as a Yankee, but it hasn't been due to attitude nor performance on the field. It's just the fact that he couldn't stay on the field, and he hasn't even been healthy enough really to even ever get in much of a slump. And again, we're a couple games in. I wouldn't call it a slump. Let's stop shitting on him, and let's just be happy that he's healthy. And I am at the point now, if he hits 128 at the All-Star break and he's played, you know, three quarters of the game, if not more, I'm going to be like, yeah, Stanton sucks right now. He's in a slump, and we're fucking wasting money on him. But we're a week in, and let's enjoy his health.
Yeah, and by the way, you know, I am understanding that he's coming off of a year where you can question him, and you know, he hit under 200, and the power was there, but not consistently, and he was hurt, and he had that infamous, you know, run home where he basically couldn't score from second on a two-out single and was thrown out by a mile. And, you know, last year was a terrible year all the way around. But you look at Stanton and say, you're hitting with Rizzo and Judge and Soto around you and this new-look Volpe. Like, you don't have to be the NL MVP from 2017. You don't have to be the savior anymore. Everybody's kind of moved on. But we need positive contributions. Last year was a terrible year for him and for the team as a whole. And he came into camp this year with a lot to prove. He said he wants to get back to being a baseball player again. That doesn't just mean hitting 190 and, you know, basically being Joey Gallo. But you see him impacting the baseball now. And yes, he got off to a slow start. But, you know, when the team's winning, to your point, it's everybody, I think, is ready to jump on Stanton, but nobody's booed Verdugo. Nobody's booed some other guys. And now he's starting to impact baseballs. And that grand slam he hit yesterday was just such a fucking dick drag around the bases. Because you know he feels it. And you know he feels the anger from the fans and the disappointment from the fans. And he's never going to shoot back at them because that's not the kind of guy he is. But I think he really loved that. He had a big base hit today. He's starting to do things that remind you of, oh, shit, this is Giancarlo Stanton. And he's always going to be an enigma as a player because he'll have 3 weeks where he's locked the fuck in, hitting everything, barreling everything, literally winning the team games on his own, to going into one of those patent slumps, Tom, that you and I have talked about for the last 5 years, 6 years, where it looks like he has never seen a breaking ball before. So,
listen, it's early on in the year. They're 8-2. I have zero to complain about.
The only complaint I will have, and this is a legit one, is the starters have to start giving some fucking length, because this bullpen is going to be
going to break down, especially with one of our guys who we're going to mention in about 2 seconds going down.
Yeah, so you want to take the lead on that? Loaiza good done for the year.
Yeah, I mean, Tommy John's just kind of been an epidemic over the past, I don't know, I'd say 6 years, and it just seems to have gotten worse. And I've got a few theories as to what's causing it.
Let's hear them.
I think the time limit, the pitch clock, you can't tell me that it has nothing to do with it. I don't know how much it has to do with it. I think there needs to be like a shit ton more data on it. And then also just what's the word? The trainification of pitching to where it used to be, you know, like Tom Seaver would ride a bicycle to strengthen his legs. And, you know, some of these guys were big long toss guys and they would throw the ball 150 million feet to strengthen their arm. And certain other things. And now we're at the point where it's like we're treating everything like a baseball and a golf swing. And I get it. You're optimizing your velocity. There's guys that in back in the early 2000s and whatnot would be topping off at 92. They're throwing 97 now, and it's great. But, you know, I'm no expert. But when you change these mechanics in order to optimize velocity and be as efficient as you can with all your movements, again, I don't know, but my theory is maybe some of these physiological movements are putting too much strain on this ligament.
I echo everything you said. I'll hit each of your points.
I'm no doctor. Really, we should have had. I know you're very big into the physical training, but this is a podcast for Will, and he's in surgery. I'm pissed.
By the way, do you want to just make sure everybody knows Will is not actually cutting people open?
No, Will's not a doctor. He works in the medical field. Obviously, I was kidding. Will has a great job, and he's doing great. He's not a doctor, everybody.
Absolutely. But, yeah, he's not. I know we'll get feedback.
He's a take doctor.
My friends who listen and be like, is he really a doctor? No.
You know what? Honestly, I might edit that out. I'm kind of pissed. I would rather people think that.
All right. Well, you can do what you want. You're the producer aficionado but, here. But, no, going back to your point on the pitch clock, you know, Major League Baseball – and the players union released a statement saying that this is 1,000% tied to the pitch clock. And of course, Major League Baseball said, no, it has nothing to do with it. There's definitely somewhere.
Listen, instead of just doing the old NFL thing of like, yeah, you're getting hit in the head does nothing. Why? Cause we say so. I would like some evidence and some data and some raw facts to give me a side. I don't want like a yes or a no. I think,
and we may not have that for years.
Of course not. But like, let's not be assholes about it, MLB, and turn into the NFL. Let's just say we're continuing to research it. We're in a holding pattern because we just don't have enough information. We're trying to keep everybody as safe as possible while also enhancing the game.
I blame both sides. I blame the players' union for making it seem like this was the worst decision in the history of Major League Baseball. It has made the game better. It has made the game go by a lot faster, and it's a much better watch for diehard fans and casual fans alike, and a better experience at the game. Does it come, you know, with a little bit of risk because it happened so soon and you had a whole generation of players who have been in the major leagues for a long time that had to learn this in essentially one spring training? Sure. And those kind of players, you know, it's what happens first? Is it the chicken or the egg? Is it, hey, they have a shit ton of innings in that elbow and eventually it was going to break down? Or no, they had to learn this pitch clock thing and the elbow is used to taking much longer in between. Let's hit your second theory. I think it's a perfect one. Actually, in college, I wrote a paper on thoracic outlet syndrome, which is a injury that basically never used to happen, but it became not quite to the level that Tommy John has, obviously. But it was an injury that, you know, pitchers never used to have, but from a bulking and training standpoint, those muscles became overdeveloped, which limited range of motion in the shoulder and caused.
It also puts a lot of stress on those tendons.
And in case of the thoracic outlet syndrome, that's, you know, you have a thoracic spine that's basically that's completely overdeveloped, and it limits the range of motion that the shoulder has to do something as forceful as throwing a baseball as hard as you can.
Interesting point, because it's like, you know, again, we're not fucking scientists and we don't have the answers, but like Ozzie Guillen goes on, who's, again, I wouldn't take his word for anything. He's a lunatic, but he goes on and, you know, he starts saying like Bartolo Colon. Did he, you know, he pitched forever. David Wells, like these guys that weren't the gym rats that tried to put every ounce of energy into every single pitch, like, they never got hurt.
Right. You know, I also think, too,
I don't know if that's right or wrong, by the way.
For the first time ever, though, you now have pitches that are being literally developed in pitching labs. Like, they're not pitches. Like, when you learn how to throw a curveball, you learn how to throw a curveball, right? And you learn how to throw a splitter and sliders and these different pitches.
Well, now you're learning how to throw. Now you're learning how to throw a perfect curveball with the exact amount of spin that you want.
Yeah, the RPM. The,
well, that and then the tilt rate spin. Or whatever, yep. The way it's coming in, the window it comes out of, all that shit. And I don't know. I mean, like, also, when you train yourself, and I'm learning a lot about this just from the golf swing because I've become so obsessed with it, but it's like, swinging is a lot different because your entire body is involved, but like when you perfect the throwing motion to the point, first of all, the throwing motion overhand is an unnatural thing. Underhand is a natural movement.
I was just going to say that. Yep.
So the overhand movement is unnatural and leads to more injuries in throwing sports than pretty much anything else. And that combined with the fact that these pitchers, they're not, like you said, they're not going out there and they're not working on their curveball or whatever, and they are going to have the exact same arm motion every single time because the goal is to pitch out of the same slot and make every pitch look different, right? Well, maybe that preciseness, perfection, whatever you want to call it, maybe hitting that tendon at the exact same point every single time as opposed to a little bit more inconsistency because you're not training all of these like tiny little body parts to fire the same exact way at the same exact time and you're just out there fucking pitching. Maybe you're not putting as much stress on it too.
The ulnar collateral ligament is a super delicate thing. When you hear forearm stress,
tell me about it.
You hear the flexor tendon, right? Like that's involved too. It's a super delicate balance where you're learning, like, is this damage to the elbow? Is this, you know, treatable with rest, recovery, and PT?
But it's such an unperfected science too, because you could go to a doctor like I have before and they'll be like, yeah, just rehab it or whatever, ice right. it, take it easy. And it's like, no. And then there's another time where it could be like, it's torn. Maybe it's not torn. We don't know. It's like, there's just
or
so much up in the air.
Partially torn, right? Mm-hmm. That like you had Masahiro Tanaka who tore, I think 14% of his UCL and never got Tommy John. And he didn't throw as hard as he did prior to the injury, but was still a super successful pitcher for a long time. And he had that patent splitter that people were going to say, oh, he's going to have to stop throwing that because it puts so much strain on that elbow. And he never had it. Right. But usually once you hear there's damage, it's really a ticking time bomb as to, okay, is it exactly Tommy John? Like the surgery Lil Isis is getting is not Tommy John.
No.
But it's a different elbow surgery that actually requires the same amount of rehab time, which is 10 to 12 months. So
yep.
We've kind of broken this down, I think, about as perfectly as we can.
As well as you can without having an answer.
Right, because everybody's searching for answers. And I think everybody wants, when you're searching for answers, there's going to be blame inflicted in different parts and different parties. And you're going to have to look at it. And this has become an epidemic. I'm going to use your term because it was perfect.
Here's another thing that kills me is that you have all these pitching coaches and they all have their, and a lot of them, I hate to say it, are fucking lazy because, you know, just like the golf swing, just like the baseball swing, like, everybody's different. Everybody's body physiology is different. So when you're trying to get these guys to throw 100 miles an hour and you only know one way to do it because it worked for a bunch of your other guys, well, maybe it doesn't fucking work for that guy because, I don't know, maybe he can't rotate his hips as much. Maybe he can't rotate his shoulders as much. I could be on this podcast for 6 hours giving you reasons as to why everybody's
different. Look
at what
happened to Tim Lincecum. Do you think that body with that force and that amount of stress was supposed to – you know, last for 10 years in the major leagues? No.
Well, exactly. Another example is like a guy like the first guy when I was a kid that was like a soup outside of Nolan Ryan that was like a gat. Like, remember Joel Zumaya?
Oh, yeah.
For the Detroit Tigers? He threw like 105 miles an hour, but he literally every pitch he threw like his last pitch on earth. How long did that last?
Well, and you know, it's interesting because that was around the mid-2000s, and that's when you started seeing the beginning of Super Bowl pens and guys that were, hey, listen, failed starters, right? You know, that used to be an insult. That used to mean, hey, you're not good enough. You don't have a good enough pitch mix. You don't have the deception in order to
or the stamina
endurance. yeah, even endurance or stamina to go 5, 6, 7 innings or 3 times through a batting order. So that immediately became, oh, you're a failed starter? Thank God. Okay, you were throwing 92. I mean, he didn't have an elbow injury, but Phil Hughes went from a pretty decent starter to, hey, we're going to put you in the pen. Now you're throwing 97, 98. Of course we're going to try to harness this. Chamberlain, and then all on down the line. And you have teams that are literally saying the starting pitcher, for the most part, you have your exceptions, of course, but give us 4 or 5 innings, because our bullpen, you look at the Yankee bullpen right now. I mean, this Nick Birdie kid, I mean, he's had 2 Tommy John surgeries in his career. He was a non-roster invitee from the Cubs. He comes in here throwing 100 miles an hour with a slider that starts at the right-handed batter's hips into the left-handed batter's batting box. Like, it's insane how much power he has through that arm, and it's just a super violent, non-sustainable pitching motion. But he's gonna make a lot of money, and he's gonna get a big deal, and that's, I think, just the way that the game has evolved. Until we go back to saying we value starting pitchers, we value contact, we value the innings eater. That's kind of what we like about Stroman, right? He doesn't throw overly hard, but he gets a lot of contact, a lot of weak contact. We don't really need as many of those guys right now, because everybody's saying, well, my bullpen has 8 guys that throw 100 miles an hour with a disgusting breaking ball that we've never seen before.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. Okay. Just like you see, I feel like the NBA is the most prevalent, where the league changes. You go from a point guard dominant league to a big man like now we're kind of going back to the big man. The big man's kind of back with these guys.
Maybe a different version of the big man, right?
Yes. Well, maybe we go back. Maybe we'll see some more Stromans, where it's like these guys are more, I would say, artists as opposed to technicians as pitchers.
Yeah, that's really well said, because you have your exceptions of your Coles and your Verlanders and guys like that, but
Is Verlander? I mean, come on. Cole and Verlander are both on the shelf right now. They're not exempt.
No, and Verlander had his Tommy John during the 2020 season. So, and he has one of the easiest, same with Cole.
Honestly,
the best,
to cap it off,
repeatable deliveries in the sport.
To cap it off, to put it in perspective for everyone how bad this is, at a high school baseball game, is at my cousin's. It's not like I'm watching random high schoolers, okay? I overheard a conversation between 2 parents, and this kid's in high school, and I watch the kid pitch, and I'm like, he's not that fucking good, but that's another epidemic of parents thinking their kids are just God's gift to earth instead of being realistic, and I pray that I don't catch that disease. But again, with that being said, I overheard these people saying, yeah, we spoke to a doctor about just getting him Tommy John now. You know, like getting Tommy John surgery before you even tear your UCL in order to protect it. That's how bad this epidemic is.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, you hear about it. It's like, well, you know, he would be a first round draft pick, but he hasn't had Tommy John yet. It's almost like, you know, you have to wear it as a badge of honor if you have it before you get drafted.
Exactly. Like, oh, well, being a virgin is not cool anymore, man.
Right, but then it's like, well, Jacob DeGrom's had 2. This Nick Birdie, who I mentioned, has 2.
Jacob DeGrom? Like, you may never pitch again.
Yeah, exactly. This guy's been riddled with injuries, and the last point of it is, the way baseball, just from the training staffs and from the way that they coddle these pitchers, this is why I said on the pod when the Yankees were not going for Snell after he turned down their initial offer. In a sport that pays the starting pitcher the most, they are utilized the least. In the postseason, with your rare exceptions, they don't go more than 4 innings. The team cannot wait to use the bullpen. Why are we paying these starters? You know, why is Blake Snell getting $32 million a year to basically throw 5 innings? Yeah, they're great 5 innings. You're probably going to have a good chance to win. But shit, man, I mean, even Luis Gil yesterday, the guy's got dominant stuff, but he's walking guys. I'm like, you didn't even get out of the 5th fucking inning.
I mean, if you just go based off money, then the game should be 5 innings long.
Exactly. Or we should be paying these middle relievers who, you know, and I'm not even talking closers. I'm talking 6th, 7th inning guys. They should be getting paid the most, because it seems like they're the ones that the managers and teams want to go to in the highest leverage situations. Like, Cole is an outlier. Verlander's an outlier. Those guys are not – I mean, that's what made Jordan Montgomery, I thought – was going to make him so much money last year because he was pitching into the seventh and eighth every single start. But that also was a Bruce Bochy thing. Most teams wouldn't allow him to do that. Cough, cough, Yankees. So unless you're Gerrit Cole, you're not given that chance. So just to put a bow on it, Tom, Yuri Perez, Shane Bieber, Jonathan Loaisiga, all suffered, all are going on the IL.
Spencer and my boy.
Strider now. Yep, whose MRI does show damage to the UCL is seeking a second opinion. Perez is already getting Tommy John. Bieber's already getting Tommy John. We mentioned Loaisiga's doing a different elbow surgery. This is on the heels of, obviously, Gerrit Cole. Now, it looks like he's going to avoid Tommy John at least for now.
Apparently, but he's playing catch.
We are seeing a lot of high-end. Framber Valdez today, before we hopped on the mics, saw breaking news. He felt elbow discomfort. He was scratched from his start tonight for Houston, and he's going to get an MRI.
I mean, so, all this elbow discomfort, all it leads to for me is getting off for work. So should I just call my boss tomorrow and tell him that my elbow hurts?
Yeah, I think so. if you need it very much so to do your job, it sucks, man. It really sucks, and there has to be something done about it because soon you're going to have the best players in the sport. They're all going to be unavailable to play. And that does not help grow the game if the best pitchers – like, could you imagine a year where, like, Pedro, Clemens, Mussina, Roy Halladay, all of them missed the entire seasons? Like, that would have been terrible for the sport. And this is terrible for the sport. Moving into college basketball –
can I talk about one more epidemic in baseball real quick?
Oh, yeah, sure. Please, 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 please.
Umpiring in general – has been abysmal this year. Maybe it's because I'm on Twitter and it's being pointed out more. Or maybe it's really just a lot worse this year. First of all, the umpiring's terrible. And more importantly, the biggest epidemic of all. Why does Angel Hernandez, why do we even let him step anywhere past the mound? Like, he should be nowhere near the plate. Like, it should be illegal for him to go near the plate at a fucking Little League field, he calls. He is so bad. I just don't understand it. And it's not like, this is a known thing. I see all the jokes every single year. This has been going on for years. I understand the fact that they have a union and whatever, but at some point, we have enough video. It's like, enough is fucking enough.
No, he's awful, and it's really bad. I've said this to
but
all
he's,
my friends.
He's awful, but then, you know what? Next fucking week, I'm going to put on the Yankees, and he's going to be behind the dish.
The problem is they are protected by a union, and I think that he used the race card when there was talk about him being let go or relieved of his duty.
Black, white, purple, orange. He fucking sucks.
And that's the thing, like... Now, Major League Baseball has done, I think, a really good job of kind of meeting him in the middle of saying, listen, okay, fine, you can continue to umpire. Michael Kay was talking about it on the broadcast yesterday. Apparently, he is actually very well respected by his peers, predominantly because he'll take all the slings and arrows that a lot of them don't want to take.
Well, if Michael Kay says it,
but he's a travesty. He makes the game a sideshow and a circus act. I mean, yesterday alone, you had the Gleyber Torres at bat, where the pitcher never engaged. He throws it. Torres is basically out of the batter's box. And then the ball wasn't even a strike, and he called it a called strike three. You had one pitch to Oswaldo Cabrera that was literally right down the middle that he called a ball. Like, it's a comical situation where everybody knows, like, I guess we're just going to have a weird game today because Angel Hernandez. And there's some other bad umpires.
The other thing is, like, I understand that you're in a union, but, like, It's a workplace like nowhere else, like everywhere else. Like, why can't we just write the guy up a couple times and then fire him? Like, do
well,
I have to be HR?
They've met him in the middle in the sense of they have not had him do any. I can't remember if it's just World Series or all postseason. But I know he's like never going to get a job in the World Series, and it might be the whole postseason too. I'll have to double check that. But you're still impacting regular season games, like. You imagine in the final weekend of the season in a pennant chase or a wild card chase, and you get told that Angel Hernandez is the home plate umpire, your season might literally hinge on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's that, or it's really every single game. If we're gonna, if MLB is doing all these, you know, changes to help us enjoy the regular season, well, that's a major one that I'd like to change, because you're right. If it's the last week of the season, but really any game, let's say the Yankees miss the playoffs by a game. And then you go back and you can look at a game in April or May that Angel Hernandez lost in the game. And I'm going to be like, well, what the fuck? That's just the same as losing the last game.
The worst part with him is he's not that way with one team in a matchup. He's so egregiously bad for both sides.
At least it's fair.
It's fair, but I will say this. As a professional, you know, you're going out there and if you're a pitcher, you're trying to work on ways to get the hitter out. If you're hitting, you're obviously trying to figure out a way to get on base and impact the game. When you have an external force like a fucking Angel Hernandez, now you're not even playing the sport anymore. You're now worried about, like, I mean, if I'm going to take it, like Juan Soto got called a strike yesterday on a ball that was 3 inches, 4 inches off the plate. Like, you think Juan fucking Soto doesn't know the strike zone?
Well, but listen,
Angel's
this is
also combative. He's combative too.
Yeah, and that's the worst part is that he'll fight back.
You up and toss your ass out.
I know, it's like, come on, dude. We know you're embarrassed, and we know you were so wrong on that, and now you're embarrassed, so you're going to make an example out of this guy for no reason. But you know what? This is how I look at it. Referees in any type of sports are like offensive linemen. The only time you hear about them, I don't want to hear about them. I don't want to hear about the umpires at all. Whenever you hear about them, they're doing a bad job.
Couldn't agree more, but you know, you do have your... You have your refs and umpires in every sport that like to make the game about them. Obviously, Scott Foster in the NBA, right? Like, what was that record with Chris Paul? Like, he was like 20 games under 500 in games refereed by Scott Foster. Like, that's a personal vendetta, and that should be looked into immediately. And there should be a rule.
I got to be honest. I would be spiteful. If I was who's he play for? Steve Kerr right now, and Foster was doing our game, and then the NBA comes to me and go, oh, why is Chris Paul a healthy scratch in it? I'd be like, Foster's refereeing, and they have beef, so I'm not going to be part of that.
I would do the same thing because you're doing a bad job of assigning crews. You know, in the NFL,
that's what Boone should do. It'd be like, oh, Boone, why did you guys pull up? Why did you guys pull up 10 minor leaguers? Oh, Hernandez is umpire in the game. It doesn't even matter. So we gave everybody, every single team member
roster transactions.
only when he calls the series. It's really bad.
You know,
dude.
Sean Hockley is kind of like that, where I think he enjoys.
You mean Ed Hockley?
What?
It's Ed Hockley.
No, Sean Hockley's his son who does it now. Ed Hockley's been retired.
Was that the jacked referee in the NFL?
Yeah, he's basically like a clone of his father.
I think he's a personal injury attorney, or maybe Ed was.
I can see that. And then you got Angel Hernandez, who, you know, literally part of the Yankees roll call from the Bleacher Creatures yesterday was fuck Angel. Like, he knows what's going on, and I feel like he really wears it as a badge of honor. Like, everybody fucking hates
That's not good for the game, though, bro.
It's not good for the game. I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying that it's prevalent in all the sports. I don't know hockey all that well, but I'm sure there's those.
You'll have to get Will on.
I always hated baseball games and football games and basketball games where I know the goddamn referees or umpires' names so well because I'm like, I just want to watch the game. I don't want to deal with this
sideshow circuit
act. You
don't want to know that they exist. You don't even want to know that they exist. That's all.
You don't. No, absolutely not. And it shouldn't be that way, but this has been part of the game for years upon years and generations. So it is what it is, but listen, they take a lot of shit, but when they're terrible at their job, there has to be more repercussions. We're talking about Angel Hernandez now, but you see the NBA, like those last 2-minute reports, like they shouldn't even file those.
I know.
If you got it wrong and you're the team, like that one with the Rockets where Jalen Brunson was like, the game wasn't even over and they issued that was the wrong call. I was like, I don't even want to hear it because nothing changes. You don't go back out there and play.
Yeah.
So it's like, you take a game away from a team or you're giving a team a win that they don't deserve. And when it impacts the results, listen, you can laugh at a really bad strike 3 missed call. You can laugh at one play that's so missed on the base paths, but instant replay overturns it. That's fine. But when it impacts how a team wins or loses and you go through the regular season and at the end when you're tallying up, whether it be 82 games or fucking 162, and you look at it and you'll be like, yep, I remember exactly why we lost that one game and it's because of the umpire or referee, that is not good.
No, not at all. Not at all. All right, you want to talk some NCAA basketball? Get off baseball for now, because I feel like we were very negative towards America's game there. Deservedly so.
No, I think we're just pointing out facts, bro. And I think, listen, again, to why the Yankees, right? Like, I don't want to nitpick, but hey, starters, let's give a little bit more length. still awesome that they're 8-2. That's a lot of fun. Baseball's in a good spot right now. It's a fun game. There's a lot of great players, but there's also a lot of great players that are missing time because of the same injury. So we have to address it, and we did. South Carolina, they won the women's national championship. They defeated Caitlin Clark in Iowa 87-75. Caitlin Clark came out with her fucking head on fire, dude. I mean, she had 18 points in the first quarter, I think, out of Iowa's 27 or something. But the most important thing here is obviously Dawn Staley and South Carolina Gamecocks went undefeated for the whole season. And that, in a sport now with a lot more parity, and they do play a lot of tough out-of-conference games to go through the tournament and just basically kill everybody in their path. This was a sense of domination that you just really don't see in pro sports, or in any sport, rather, anymore.
No doubt about it. Caitlin Clark was amazing in the first quarter, but then, you know, she only had I know it's an only, but really for her it is. She only had 30 points. South Carolina figured out a way to slow her down. Outside of Martin, really nobody else did much, and they're not a very deep team anyways. Iowa, I think they only played like 6 or 7 players. But you know what? South Carolina, I know Cordosa is their star, and she had a massive double-double and an incredible game, but this was such a team win for them. I mean, everybody but one player not only played but scored and was productive, and every single player, I'm looking at the stats now, filled the stat sheet. That coach is amazing. It was truly a team win and a team season, and great job by those ladies dominating like not many other teams ever this season's NCAA women's basketball season.
Yeah, this rivals some of those UConn teams for sure. I mean, this was, and like you said, the balanced attack and the different ways they
compete. Just, I love that more than anything, is just seeing like everybody contribute, and that's just a testament to the coach too. It really is.
It is. No, Dawn Staley, and also a class act, you know, after the game, you know, propping up Caitlin Clark saying, yes, you helped grow our game. And that
I was
really
disappointed
cool
to see. I really wanted to see Caitlin Clark cap off her college career with a title, but they ran into a buzzsaw and they got outclassed by a much better team. Caitlin Clark can be the best player all she wants, but what I love about team sports is you're going to get beat by the better team.
Yep, and that's exactly what happened. Like you said, that was a buzzsaw that South Carolina was. So congrats to them. But the bombshell news on the day of the NCAA Men's Championship final, we got John Calipari leaving Kentucky for Arkansas. There's a lot of different musical chairs with the coaching and why this job even became available. But what were your initial reactions when you saw the news?
Surprised, but at the same time not surprised. Hilarious that he's going somewhere else in the SEC. I don't even know if the Kentucky fans are going to be mad, just because I think they're so happy to finally be rid of him. I think the name outweighed the name and the cachet outweighed the performance of Calipari for, I don't know, 8 to 10 years now, what it feels like, at least 5. He hasn't had really a great run since when? That team that went undefeated until they lost? Or no, probably the... Probably what?
Didn't the De'Aaron Fox.
The De'Aaron Fox and the Malik Monk
the
Final Four run.
Team that lost to North Carolina.
Okay, so yeah, like 5-6 years. And I think his name carries a lot more weight than his game. And listen, he'll prop up Arkansas. For me personally, right now, currently constituted as a coach, I would take Musselman over Calipari.
Well, you know, it's very interesting how this job became available, because you got Musselman who, he gets the USC job because Enfield leaves for SMU. And the only reason he left for SMU is because SMU is being gobbled up by the ACC and looks at that as a much better job and a much better basketball conference. So he goes there, that USC job becomes open. Musselman, who did a really good job at Arkansas, goes there. And now all of a sudden this Arkansas job is open and you're hearing, you know, where do they go? Like, who has ties to Arkansas? And I guess Calipari has some kind of ties to the, whether it be the AD or whomever, some boosters. But this was a job he coveted. I'm sure through back channels there was discussions of, hey, if this job becomes available, do you want it? The biggest thing for Kentucky is they didn't have to fire him, which means they didn't have to pay him his $34 million buyout, which is fascinating to me because that was a situation where I think that they were going to have a very awful and brutal relationship because they were not going to fire him and pay him that money, but they also obviously didn't want him there. It felt untenable. We talked about it after the loss to Oakland. This situation in Kentucky, you're expected to win, and the fans, as Will points out very – very intelligently, they don't give a shit about how great the NBA players are when they get to the NBA. Why aren't they winning us national championships at Kentucky? Because that's all that fan base cares about. So pretty fascinating development. And now you've got one of the most preeminent jobs in the sport, if not in all of sports, or the University of Kentucky men's head basketball coach job vacant.
I'm hearing the Baylor coach.
I have a couple ideas of where they could go, but where are there any names that – kind of point out to you early on in this process?
I was hearing the Baylor coach, fucking Big Cat put up his stupid video that he puts up every time when it's like, sometimes you got to go back in order to move forward with Rick Pitino.
Oh, Pitino.
Everybody, no. I didn't even get to enjoy a season with him yet because of how it ended. Can I just have something, please? For the love of God, can I just have something? I mean, my fucking quarterback tore his ACL four plays in, or tore his Achilles four plays in last year. Can I have something? Please. I'm begging here. I'm about to cry. But I don't know who's going to be the head coach of Kentucky. I'm hoping that they go with a fresh face. Maybe a Billy Donovan. I don't know. Get him out of, where is he, in Chicago still?
Yep.
And then Calipari, it's just so, like, he's so rich that I'm sure Arkansas is going to give him a shit ton of money to make up for the $34 million that he didn't get for getting fired. I would love to get a severance package like that. Talk about a golden parachute. But again, it's so perfect because you know Calipari just bought himself another 6 years of getting sucked off because I already read that they've got $5+ million war chest of NIL money. So he's going to be getting the big blue chippers there, and they're going to be much more prevalent in the national spotlight because that's what Calipari does best, not coach on the court. So it's going to be a suck fest for a few years over there and wherever the hell Arkansas that school is. And it's just perfect. Cal lands perfectly.
Fayetteville, Arkansas. Yeah, it's pretty interesting to me that job.
Shout out to J. Cole, even though he's from North Carolina, Fayetteville, North Carolina. But I had to give him a shout out.
By the way, very, very interesting weekend for J. Cole.
Yes.
But I got to tell you what, man, this job feels like it's perfect. And because it's not Kentucky, I actually think Arkansas is a much better fit for Cal at this point in his career. You did see him start to evolve a little bit this year. They started shooting more threes. They played a more modern version of basketball that they weren't playing for a long time that he really didn't want to play. He's starting to evolve with the times. Like you said, they're going to get so many great prospects just simply because of his ability to just get these guys positioned for riches in the NBA, the war chest of NIL money. It's also a low-key, super really good environment for basketball, watching a lot of regular season games over the past few years with Arkansas being good. That place looks like it fucking brings it during game day. But as for Kentucky, I don't think Pitino at this point has any interest in leaving. The St. John's job, listen, that's a huge thing for him being in New York. He loves living on winged foot. He loves the short commute. And he had a lot of positive momentum finishing off the season.
I don't like the fact that one of your reasons for Pitino to stay is a short commute. That should not be at the top of the list, but I'll hold on to it.
For an older guy, I mean, that's a big thing, right? He's a New Yorker. I think the St. John's job means a lot to him. I don't think going back to Lexington at this point is a situation that's great for him or for the university. I think the university needs a really fresh start. You know, I'm seeing the fact that, shit, there's rumors that they're going to offer Dan Hurley a godfather offer, meaning one he can't refuse. I don't see a relationship, Dan Hurley's tough New Jersey rigidness going to Lexington, Kentucky. I'm not sure if that's a match made in heaven.
Pitino pulled it off.
Also, What's that?
I said Patino pulled it off with the
Patino
NY.
Patino pulled it off. He did. But, you know, you're looking at certain situations where Providence was never, even though he took Providence to the Final Four, that was never going to be Kentucky. But over the last 25 years, I mean, shit, we're talking on the night of a possible sixth championship in 25 years for UConn.
You better hope Pearl really is listening, baby.
Is that an allure to go to Kentucky? Like, is the Kentucky job a much better job than UConn right now? Now, I will say this, because they're in the SEC and because of all that great football money, a luxury that he does not have at the University of Connecticut because of their disgusting, despicable football program.
I'm going to build up that program.
Being an independent, please do. he's going to have if they offer him, you know, the most money of any college basketball coach in the history of the game and give him a lifetime offer, like, does he do that? I don't know. I think he's really happy where he
lifetime
is.
Lifetime offer? What the hell?
That's
yeah. Like, I wouldn't give anybody a lifetime offer.
Well, they gave it to Cal.
That's the fucking problem with these state schools.
Bill Self has one at Kansas.
That's the problem with these fucking state schools. It's not their money. So they're just like, yeah, whatever, just fucking give it to them. And now guess what? You just got bailed out, but you almost had to pay $34 million because you gave somebody a lifetime contract.
This is a program that is not going to tolerate being irrelevant. So they might have to do some shit that is unethical and probably not the most intelligent, but desperation makes
probably not the best use of taxpayer money.
Probably not. But again, at the University of Kentucky, if they win championships, I think a lot of those people would be okay with that transaction, as crazy as that sounds. But sports don't make sense. Sports isn't real life. It forces people to make some crazy ass decisions, especially in a desperate time. Like you said, the golden parachute for Cal. I think Kentucky is absolutely ecstatic. I don't think they give a shit at all that he went to Arkansas, because they look at him as a diminished asset that they no longer have to worry about, and they don't have to cling to this really nasty relationship that's gotten toxic. So Hurley, probably not, but that's the big name, right? Patino, don't see it. Scott Drew, that could make sense. Do they circle to Nate Oat to Alabama? Is he the guy next in line? They got to go out and they got to get this right, though, because that is a program. It's like those top programs in college football. Like, if you're Ohio State and you're bad for 3-4 years, you know, you'll sell your soul to get Urban Meyer just to get you back into the main picture, right? You can't afford to be bad for an extended period of time.
Not at all. Not at all. All right, let's talk some PGA real quick.
I can't believe on a Monday rundown it's our third thing on the docket, but shit.
Well,
it's
that's probably also
Texas Open.
It's the Valero Texas Open, and we haven't mentioned it yet, but we're going to be doing tomorrow or something at some point this week. My head is spinning. I got to double check the calendar as to what days we're doing what, but we'll be giving you guys a Masters preview with our foursomes and breaking it down. Today we're just recapping the Valero Texas Open, which Sean and I tweeted out our picks. That's on me again. This will be the last time I apologize for it, but that's on me. Sean, I beat your
ass
this week.
Yeah, I got my ass.
I had Aaron Rye 58th, Ludvig 14th, Parker Cootie 58th. He was making a run there, and then he fell out. And Tommy Fleetwood 7th. Not a great week for me, but you were real bad. I ended up at 34th place. You had Corey Connors 25th, Ricky Fowler cut, Jordan Spieth 10th. Good job by you. And
yeah,
Eric Cole missed the cut. That is a 50th place. I got the point on that week. And the totals now lay 8-5. I have a new rule that I'm cooking, and I wanted to hear your opinion on it. I was thinking, in order to make the Masters feel a little bigger, do we add points to the person that wins the week of the Masters? It's something that we could stew over for the night.
Yeah, let's talk about it. I don't hate the idea, but let's talk a little bit more about it and see where we land.
Make it feel a little more important, you know? Really look at the leaderboard or at the field and take your picks.
Yeah, let's chat about it. But
let's talk about the tournament here, though. First of all, Ash K, I technically, even though he was in a playoff, he led wire to wire. It was a ball striking clinic. Pops his shoulder out and goes out and still grabs the tournament in the playoff. What's the guy? Danny McCarthy. I mean, what a fucking... Can you believe that? He chased him down in like 9 holes.
Eight birdies in a row.
Oh, my God. I would kill for 8 birdies in a season. And this guy's getting them back to back to, you know. It's, I mean, he had more birdies than we're going to do podcasts this week in 1-9.
It was fucking crazy. We're doing one every single day. I'll tell you what, man. This guy's a virtuoso with the putter. Holy.
Oh, yeah. He's one of, he's like, what's the other guy's name? Brad Faxon, where it's just like, when he retires, people are going to be going to him for putting advice, like Rory goes to Faxon and many others. I mean, his short game is incredible, but it wasn't incredible for one shot there. I tweeted it out. I saw how many waggles he did. I hated it from the start, and then he just laid the sod over that ball. As Bryson DeChambeau likes to say, he hit the big ball before the little ball, meaning the earth. And you never want to see that. And that was one of those shots where it's just like you get a little nervy. You do too many waggles. You then you're standing there like, should I step off? Oh, I should step off. Oh no, now I can't. I've been standing here for this long, and then the next thing you know, you just drop your shoulder. The club head hits the ground before the ball, and you're dumping it in the water. We've all been there, just not on the 18th hole of a playoff to go to the Masters.
You know, to me, it was one of those things where he either just ran out of steam or he had too much time to think. Because as he's
too much time to think, bro. Too much time.
As he's on this furious track of 8 consecutive birdies just to force. I mean, I give Akshay Bhatia a lot of credit for hanging in there, especially with the shoulder and being able to stave off. Because if you rattle off 8 consecutive birdies, you're probably the person in the lead is starting to shit their pants.
Oh, yeah.
So Akshay staying in there, really give him a lot of credit. But I think McCarthy went from, I'm going to do this. I got to get this. With this gets me to the playoff. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. To I'm thinking about it. Oh, shit. I might actually have a chance to win this thing now. And there you go. Too much time. Too many waggles. Plopped it right in the water.
It was a tough scene. And it was really tough because as a golfer who loves to just duff chips after taking too much time over it, I literally was like, that's too many waggles. I don't like it. And then the next thing you know, it's in the water. As for Akshay, yeah, it was an incredible week for him, and he's really starting to put it together. I think he's only like 19, 20, 21, something like that.
22. Very young.
22, okay, 19, 20, 21, 22. Finally got to the right number, but regardless, he's really young. He's an incredible ball striker. I mean, watching him hit irons is just picturesque. So as long as he can keep the driver in the fairway, which he did this week, that is the key thing for him. He is erratic. He has switched to that broomstick putter, which seems to be working out for him right now. He's pretty hot. I could see Akshay winning a couple more times on tour this year. And I think he's going to nab maybe a major or two. I don't know. I feel like I say that about every young player.
Maybe.
I'm not going to tell you he's going to win 5 or 6, but I think he could go out and get one with the way he hits the ball.
So you have this awesome back end of this tournament where McCarthy goes on this furious run. Bhatia staves him off, ends up winning in the playoff. He gets the invitation to Augusta. He finished 9 shots back of the lead, so it doesn't matter. But Rory played really well. He shot 11 under. That's a name.
I'm tired of this shit.
I know, and we both are. Just a little foretelling.
Can he put together 4 rounds? I know every single tournament, I tweeted this out, every single tournament he goes out and he puts up a 63 once a week or once a 4 rounds. But it's like,
he's not going to be in my foursome this
can I stop seeing the Rory's trending stuff? Let's all just get on the same page and just decide we'll celebrate when he wins, but we're going to miss this one.
3 names that stood out to me, Hideki and Tommy Fleetwood, each finished at 8 under. Jordan Spieth finished at 6 under. So, hey, listen, Jordan, I mean, listen, he got me that 10th place finish.
Spieth
that I needed
was just, I mean, it was a true play. Spieth performance. I mean, he's...
Well, and it's in Texas, too.
He's,
right?
Like, not even playing play on the well. Golf course, and then he's hitting balls on roofs to get you know, the TIO. It's like, it's always an adventure with him. I did like what I saw out of Hideki, though.
Yeah, absolutely. When you get a good Hideki performance, you remember how fucking good this guy is. It's not all the time.
As for Tommy, again, I picked him to win this week. It was more of a trying to will him to win for me. He had a good week, but like he's always right there. Can we just get across the finish line?
Anybody else?
Nah, that's really it for me. I'm looking ahead right now.
Of course. It's Masters Week, baby.
It is. It's Masters Week, everybody. All right, we're going to wrap this up with some NBA playoffs, or the NBA playoff picture, if you will.
The NBA playoff picture.
We don't really have to talk like Celtics or Bucks. I mean, we know where they're at.
Oh, we have to talk Bucks.
Bucks, yeah, we do. They're only one game ahead of the Magic.
They are toilet paper soft right now. They are getting their asses beat. They lost to Toronto,
who's tanking,
and the G League version of the Grizzlies, all in this past week. Now listen, they can turn it on. We know they can, but they're soft, man.
Wow! Have you looked at their schedule, by the way?
Oh, I have.
Then not only do they play the Magic twice, they play probably the hardest last four games, and the Thunder.
Yep. So maybe Boston doesn't have much to play for in that one, but I'm looking at this and I'm saying this is not a team that you can say, well, they have the championship DNA. No, they don't. Jrue Holiday is no longer there. Coach Bud is no longer coaching this team. This is a brand new team, even though you have Giannis. And I really am disappointed in Giannis. Listen, he's putting up the numbers this year. He's been awesome. He's battled through some injuries. Obviously, it's been a weird, kind of tumultuous year, despite how good their record is. You fire your coach midseason. You bring in Doc. You get off to a slow start with him. Then you start rattling off wins, and now you're like this. You're playing your worst basketball late into the season, and you don't have the pedigree with this version of the team. It may still be the Milwaukee Bucks, but it's not the Milwaukee Bucks from 2021. This resembles more the Milwaukee Bucks that got dog-walked by the fucking play-in champion Miami Heat last year as a 8 beating a 1. So I'm telling you what, man, these are not signs that this team is just going to kick it into overdrive once the playoffs start. They got a lot to figure out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Should not have said we're going to gloss over them. I only meant the Celtics because if you look up, I mean, if things break badly for the Bucks, they could end up at the 4 seed.
Yeah, easily. I mean, here's the thing with the Celtics. They lost that weird DeJounte Murray game, that Hawks game where they collapsed. I think they had a 32-point lead and they lost it. Listen, they're bored. I'm just going to put it at that. It shouldn't happen. Like, you should never lose when you're up by 30 to anybody. But weird things in the NBA happen because there's so many guys who can heat check and go on these crazy runs. And I think at this point, the Celtics are just making sure nobody gets hurt. Porzingis didn't play in
that
game.
They should be, yeah.
They're just getting ready for the playoffs. They're 15 games ahead. I mean, they clinched the one seed like 3 weeks ago. Like this is not supposed to happen. So I don't really care about them. But Tom, we got to talk about your Knicks. You know, OG finally returns, but on the same day you get the bad news about Randall ruled out for the season. I think in a quiet moment you knew he was not coming back, but to get the final news, it had to be tough.
No, I mean, I had a feeling he was either going to come back and just kind of be, you know, not like three quarters of the player that he really is, and it was going to be disappointing there. We were going to hear this news. It sucks for me. Let's just see what we can do with Mitch Rob coming back and OG coming back and I guess our team fully healthy as to what it is right now.
Well, that's what you got to hope for, man. I mean, Anunoby comes back. You win a couple games. Brunson is just... he's not going to win, obviously, but he should get MVP votes. I'm just saying that right now. He should absolutely get MVP votes for what he's done. And he takes an absolute beating. But he had a game the other night against the Kings where I think fucking Josh Hart had 19 rebounds and 14 points and played all 48. Like, it's just a really fun brand of basketball. How far can you go? I mean, I would think that now knowing this news – listen, you're sitting in the 4 spot right now. You're basically tied for the 3rd with Orlando. They have the tiebreaker against you, but you're only one game behind the Bucks.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They could be in 4th.
Crazy. Yeah.
It is. it's bittersweet as a Knicks fan just because I don't see them being able to get past possibly the second round. But again, I'm...
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. Would you rather stay in the four or stay or drop to the five and play Cleveland in the first round? Or would you rather move up to three and play and possibly play like in Indiana or Orlando?
I don't want to play Orlando. That's for sure. They can ratchet up the defense even better than the Knicks. And I think if there's anybody that can stop a Brunson run offense, it's the Magic with the combination of the big men and the guard play that they have defensively. I think I'd rather play the Cavs. I think honestly it would be okay if I want the playoffs again, like last week. I just want them to stop and be here right now and just be the way it is, because the Knicks, I mean, I think the Cavs are scared.
Well, you A, own the Cavs, and B, the Cavs look awful right now. Like, uh-huh. You would catch them at a great time. They have sucked. They lost a brutal game the other day to Sacramento. To Phoenix, where they were winning that game, and it's almost amazing how they lost. I can't even say good
job.
It's
just got a foot out the door.
Yeah, Mitchell is not re-signing. There's some bad feelings, I think. And I think if they got the Knicks, just the collective thought would be, fuck, we got to do this again. And they're not tough enough. They're not mentally or physically tough enough to deal with the Knicks.
They aren't. But I'm going to be UConn fan Sean right now, and I'm just going to say they're still a great team, and they still have probably a top 10 scorer in the NBA in Mitchell, so we're going to take him seriously.
As you should, and Tibbs will make sure that you do. Philly's an interesting story. They got Embiid back. They had a game the other day where they beat Miami thanks to 50 points.
Miami sucks right now, by the way. I mean, they're fighting
they
for that.
Suck.
They're fighting to try and they played the Pacers, who are reeling a couple of days ago, and the Pacers beat them, and that would have been a huge game to get up because the Pacers are two spots ahead of them. If I'm the Knicks, I'm looking at the Heat. I'm not scared of them at all. Is that crazy to say? I don't know. I mean, I know Simmons calls them the zombie Heat all the time. I think you could stick a fork in the Heat.
Yeah, see, unlike Milwaukee, Miami is not the team that I want to fuck around and find out with.
I know. I think it's a stick a fork in the
Heat. I don't care what seed we are. We'll kick it in and we'll be fine. And as ridiculous as it sounds, because they have been playing like shit, I'm like, you know what? After the last few years, I can't tell you you're wrong. I can't say that it's wrong.
To be honest, I can't even look at the Heat because every time it comes up, that Jimmy Butler roster pick comes up, and I can't take it serious. Have you seen it? The one where he looks like fucking Prince or something?
Yeah, the hair? Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah it
he
is.
He went like emo Jimmy to start the year.
That'd hilarious. Be something I would do.
That would be great, by the way. We get you.
I'll
get
work
you,
on it.
Twitter avatar with that. Yeah, that'd be great. We'll see what Michaela thinks. Moving into the West, you got Minnesota and Denver right now tied with mm-hmm. Oklahoma City one game back. This is a three-game standings that switches seriously every single day.
But not
the
to mention they're playing each other on Wednesday.
On Wednesday, and the T-Wolves are getting Cat back, it sounds like, soon, and they need him. They've been good without him, not as good as they were with him. And he opens up a whole nother dimension for them, but you got Denver. I mean, if Denver clinches the one, you know, working all the way down the standings, the Lakers, who have won 9 of their last 10, they've been playing great basketball.
They have.
LeBron's been really good, and Davis has been a stud, as has D'Angelo Russell, who's playing the best basketball of his career. They are right now in the 9 spot.
You know who's real hot, though?
Their way up.
9-1 in their last 10? Your Kyrie Irving led. Obviously, Luka's on the team. Dallas Mavericks.
You know, I was going to talk about them next, but the Lakers and them have been the hottest teams in the West lately that are not atop the standings. And those are two teams that nobody wants to face. I think Golden State, their time is done. They're obviously going to be in the play-in tournament, but it looks like they're cemented at the 10 spot with the Lakers being on this hot streak. I don't worry about the Kings. I think the Kings are kind of done.
Yeah.
But you're looking at this play-in right now, Tom. If the season were to end today and the play-in starts, you've got Golden State at the 10, LA with the 9, Sacramento in the 8, and New Orleans in the 7. I mean, my God, all those teams are really, really good if you catch them on the right night.
Absolutely. You know what? I'll just ask you, who's coming out of those two games? So it would be Pelicans, Warriors, and Kings, Lakers would be the two games, right?
Yeah, I would take New Orleans and I'd take the Lakers.
I agree with you. And then I would probably take the Lakers in a one-game winner-take-all go to the playoffs. Because that's what it is, right? They play the playing game and then they play. Or no, they both make it, right?
Yeah, you have the 7 and the 8.
Oh, okay. All right, never mind then. Yeah. I thought you just played for the one playoff spot. Honestly, the NBA should listen to that because that would be cooler.
I actually like it because you got the top 6, right? So the other two, you're not completely done. But if you're the 9 or 10 and you lose once, you're out. But if you're the 7 or 8, you get another game.
Yeah, I can't remember how it works, but whatever.
I just told you.
It is a fun. Thank you. I appreciate that. It is a fun wrinkle. I've really got my eye on the Mavs, though. I think that's a team with the addition of Gafford, the way Kyrie is being able to play off of Luka, finally, the perfect position for Kyrie since 2016-17 when he played with LeBron, who is just as much of a heliocentric player as Luka. It's perfect for him. I've really got an eye on that. As long as they can hold up defensively, I think that nobody wants to play a guy that can go off for 60 and another guy that could go off for 35 on any given night.
And you know what's hilarious that you just said is you said Kyrie plays off of Luka. There's been a lot of times lately where Luke has been playing off of Kyrie.
Absolutely, man. He's just letting him cook.
Yeah, and you see a balance with them that I was very dubious about whether they were going to figure out.
I read that Kyrie looked at the eclipse without glasses today.
He probably did. He's probably feeling super at one with the universe right now. But this was an experiment that I give Dallas credit for. I and most people thought when they gave him that 3-year deal of this past summer of what are you doing? You're hitching your wagon to this guy. He's going to turn Luka off. Luka's going to try to ask for a trade because he doesn't want to deal with his bullshit. These two guys on the court together and how they play off of each other. You know, there's Kyrie has no issues when Luka's cooking and Luka's running the show, and Luka has no issue when it's Kyrie time. You see where both of them are obviously huge clutch guys who make big shots late. This is a team, Tom, that with the addition of Gafford that you said, and PJ Washington's playing a little bit better. You still got Hardaway, who even though has not been the best, you know he can get hot for you in spurts. Maxi Kleber as well. This is a team nobody wants to face, man. Nobody wants a part of Dallas. And I'm not predicting that they'll win. I'm not predicting that they'll go to the NBA Finals. But they're going to give whoever they play a really difficult time.
Now
I'm looking at the 4-5 right now, the season were to end today. You get Luka against the Clippers again, who could just kill him. I feel like Luka
against the Clippers or the Suns would be incredible.
That's it. He's the Grim Reaper of the Clippers and the Suns.
Yep. Yep. No, he's amazing. The only team, I mean, they're 7-3, but they're just really losing games that they shouldn't. The other team that we didn't mention was Phoenix. This team, it just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, Booker is doing all that he freaking can right now to just keep them where they are.
Yeah, I mean, right now they're tied with the Pelicans. They're percentage points ahead of New Orleans, which is why they right now are in the 6th spot, New Orleans in the 7. But if they drop into the play-in, again, I would put them right there with the Lakers and shit, even the Warriors. Like, you're going to have a game where KD and Booker and Beal all go nuts, and they're going to win all of those games. But the defense is just not consistent. I would say even the offense isn't consistent.
Yeah, it's not at all.
They don't have somebody to settle it down, and that's the problem, where when they're front-running and they're playing great, they're fine. But when the game gets
Well, when it's
a 10-2
run, it turns into a 15 because they don't have a Chris Paul, really, to be like, all right, guys, let's run a play here.
Right. When they're forced to play a style of basketball that they don't want to, they don't have somebody to, like you said, kind of control the tempo and settle it down. So that's going to eventually be their issue. Are they good enough to win possibly if they get through the play-in? Sure. They would play the 3 seed, right? So if you're the Thunder, like, are you excited about seeing Phoenix? No. But I'm sure
that's a, that know, might like, be I, that might be the ideal matchup for Phoenix to talk yourself into it, because that's the only team that doesn't have a big man really.
Right.
Outside, sure, I mean, yeah. Chet obviously, but a true big man, that because KD could guard Chet, and I'd be pretty confident.
Yep, absolutely. And let's keep in mind too that even though Oklahoma City's been awesome, they've been dealing with this Shea injury now for a little bit.
And yeah, they've been on a slide.
As great, and they're a young team. They're still a very young team that has not been in the pressure cooker of this before. But they also could be the team that you're looking up. And I made the comp of the 2022 Nets last pod or last Monday rundown, where it's like you're facing this super young, really defensive laden, athletic team, and you're kind of an older team. And you know, maybe Durant's not able to shed.
It could be the 2012 Thunder, though.
Could be a 2012 Thunder too. Yep.
You know, so listen, we'll have to see. The East is a little more locked up, and the West, it could change. Everything could change in 1 second.
The middle of the East is in flux between the Magic, Knicks, Cavs, and Pacers.
All of the West is in flux.
Yeah, and all of the West is in flux at the very top, and then obviously
in on the way play-in down.
And- Yeah, six through ten. So it's going to be a fascinating end to the regular season, man. Only a couple more games. It'll conclude on Saturday and Sunday. And
enough
then,
of that. Enough of that. We know what's coming
then we
on. Well, unless, we I know that. I know that. And we're going to talk plenty of NBA. But there's a game that's about to tip off. When does it tip off? 11 o'clock at night?
In an hour. Exactly 1 hour from now.
Let's break it down. Were you watching at home by yourself? I'm gonna guess, because that's what a sicko fan would do, like yourself and like myself. All right, so you're watching by yourself. Are you watching on the couch? Are you gonna stand? Like, what are we doing here? I've never, you know, I haven't been part of this championship thing since 2009.
I'll be laying on the couch. I'll be then maybe.
What are you wearing?
Let's see. I got a 2011 UConn championship shirt that I've worn, throughout, the tournament. So
right. I love that.
I'm just going to keep that going. And other than that, dude, like, hey, if the game goes one way that it can, which is UConn coronation, you know, pants will be off probably 10 minutes before the game ends. You know, obviously luxuriating here because we could have a championship. But
you gonna pop a cork? You gonna have a little glass of something? I mean, I know you and Will had a little glass of something.
Well, I came back. Yeah, that was funny. I came back from a party earlier that day, and so I was pretty buzzed. And but I don't have anything in the house.
I was absolutely in shock when you guys texted me and said that you were recording, and then you did, and I fell asleep on the couch.
And
Michaela woke me up at 1 o'clock, and I was like, fuck, I got to put this pod out. And I was like, you know what? If we get canceled because of this pod, whatever. But I'm not sifting through a 30-minute pod to hear if they said anything stupid. And there wasn't too much.
No, Will had a moment where it could have gotten.
Hey, he landed the plane, though. Like I said, no Musburgers here.
No Musburgers.
Will's a little young for a Musburger anyways, but he is riding that line. Let's be careful.
Yeah, he was. I'm glad that he found himself back in. But no, green tea tonight. That's what I'll be drinking.
Oh, no drinks. Okay.
No,
you better drink
really
that green tea. Keep that voice going for the next 7 days.
I have not drank during any of the games during the tournament. So I really am just locked in. At that point, I don't need anything else. Just get me into the game. And the only person I really text during the game is my dad about, you know, what's going on with and getting his thoughts.
As long as Will knows better not to text you.
And he does. He's much better about it. So I give him credit for that. So, yeah, man, we'll see. I mean, I know you're picking UConn.
Question. I'm assuming I'll speak for Will and I. I think we're both going to go with UConn. I'm looking forward to hearing from him tomorrow. What's your pick, man? Come on. You got an hour.
I'm picking the Huskies.
Let's go, baby. No jinx. Knock on wood. You're picking the Huskies.
Yeah, hey, I've never said that they were going to lose any of these games. I'm just nervous for some of these games because they're good teams. And I'm going to reiterate what I've said the entire tournament. And you can laugh at me and everybody who's listening to this. By the time people hear this tomorrow, most likely, the game will have already happened. But Listen, what UConn has done to these teams, you're not supposed to do. They're not supposed to be winning Elite Eight games by 30. You're not supposed to win a Final Four game by 14. And I will say that that score was really not indicative of how that game went. Obviously, Will and I talked about it, but Tom,
by the way, I forgot. I never asked you. What did you think of? I'm sure you listen to Picks Boss. What did you think of me taking the spread before I even knew what it was, and then doubling down and taking whatever this spread is tonight without even them winning the first game?
I wasn't surprised at all. That's such a you move. I loved it, but I was like, yeah, that's what Tom's going to do.
Well, they covered the first game, so
they did. And again, like, that's the thing, right? Like, they ended up winning by 14. But listen, Alabama, at a certain point in that game, was shooting like 70% from three. I mean, UConn would be up 9, and you think, okay, here comes the run. And then Alabama would hit 2 threes in a row. And it's like, Jesus Christ, you can't really relax.
This is how I feel about this UConn team. Alabama, it felt like they won that game. They played so much better than the rest of the teams were playing UConn in this tournament, and they lost by almost 15 points.
Yeah.
It's hard to wrap your head around.
The matchups have been very favorable to Donovan Clingan in the last three rounds, right? I mean, Illinois did not really have anybody that could guard him in the post. Alabama, obviously, with Grant Nelson, you know, that's not a good matchup for him. And obviously, Northwestern didn't have – or San Diego State, rather. They could mess with him a little bit with Ladee, but they just don't have anybody of the size. But now we get the heavyweight matchup that I think everybody wanted. You get Clingan and Edie. You get Edie, who's now the two-time reigning player of the year, against Donovan Clingan, who's much more popular amongst NBA draft people, right? I mean, Tom, in your opinion, is it even close when you project what they could be as pros? But – we're not talking about the pros right now.
No, not at all.
We're talking about the NCAA final.
No, of course, and it's a much different game. You can stand inside the cylinder. You can do a lot of different things. You know, the 3 seconds called a lot. Is there even 3 second violation in basketball? In college basketball, I can't even remember. I don't think so.
Nope.
So you can just, I mean, Edie can just camp in the paint. It's much different. And yeah, Clingan's going to have his hands full tonight, but again, just like the South Carolina ladies, UConn's a team, man. It's not a one game. It's not a one man.
Well, they had five players in the Alabama game that scored at least 12 points, including Steph Castle at 21 and became one of only three freshmen ever to in a Final Four game have 20 points. So listen, they can beat you in a lot of different ways. If they can force turnovers, this game is going to be over really fast because Edie did his thing. But if you look at the Tennessee game and if you look at the NC State game, the guards for Purdue, they did make some shots, but they were very careless with the basketball. And they turned it over a lot. And if that happens with UConn, you know, you're probably going to put Castle on their best perimeter defense, on their best perimeter guard. You obviously got the size of Newton and the peskiness of Diarra, Cam Spencer. So you like them more in that matchup. But how is this game going to be called, Tom? Because if this game is called very ticky-tacky and they're not letting them play,
it's good for Purdue.
That key is going to put UConn in a really tough proposition because I like Samson Johnson a lot, but he is not somebody who is going to neutralize Edie. You need Clingan on the floor a lot, even in the Bama game. You know, when they took Clingan out and they were up, I think it's 7 or 8, they took him out, and within 2 minutes, the lead was basically gone. So they're a different team when Clingan doesn't play. Even though they can still win and they can still play a different brand of basketball, they're not the same team when Clingan's out.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably – it's a down draft, but he's one of the best prospects in the country. So I can understand that. I'll have to keep an eye on the whistle. Thank you for that insight. Everybody else will have to keep an eye on the whistle as well. I'm going to let you get out of here and get prepared. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll be doing, I don't even, what's our pod tomorrow? We're doing you and William are going to recap the finals, and I'll probably pop on for that and give my funny opinions on that. What else do we have? Anything?
You and I are going to then talk about the season and series finale of Curb.
Yes, we are. I'm going to have to fit that in tomorrow because tonight's going to be basketball and then bed.
Yep. Me too, man. So I was hearing very good things. I saw the final episode got a 92% from Rotten Tomatoes. So there's something good there.
All right. Well, listen, that's how I make all my decisions. I go to Rotten Tomatoes. Who should I vote for president? Rotten Tomatoes. What should I eat for dinner?
No, don't be a dick.
I'm only kidding. But listen, good luck tonight. Enjoy the game.
Thanks, buddy.
Keep your pants on as long as you can. And
we'll,
just
we'll
for the
see
night.
How long it lasts.
Just for the night. Just for the night, but not, I'm not a fraud, but I'll just give you a little go Huskies, okay?
I love it. I appreciate you. You're a good man. All right, everybody. Go Huskies!